This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, September 3rd. I'm your host, Rosanna Longobetter, in for Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the federal government created an emergency rental assistance program to help those hard hit by the pandemic. But are those resources being put to use as intended? If you're looking for a way to combine the arts and the outdoors and leisure time, the Streetwise Art Festival opens this weekend and stretches into next week. And it's the first Friday of the month, and the Nature Almanac crew takes us to Longmont's Lagerman Reservoir to check in on migrating shorebirds. At 8:30 this morning, Connections comes your way. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative will kick off your weekend with an eclectic mix of music until noon. All that is still coming up, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Boulder City Manager released a proposed 2022 budget of about $470 million yesterday. According to the city's press release, the operating portion of the budget is an 11% increase from 2021, and the capital portion has a 128% increase. The capital portion increase is largely due to a planned utilities fund bond issuance. The city manager is expecting revenue to go up in 2022 after the pandemic's sharp decline. In the report, the city manager's budget said it prioritizes, quote, renewal and restoration with a goal of bringing relief to a weary community and stretched employees. The Denver Department of Housing Stability and Mayor Michael Hancock launched an initiative yesterday with a goal of housing 200 homeless residents within 100 days. The city is calling the new initiative a housing surge. It plans to connect homeless Coloradans with housing resources and a new surplus of housing vouchers. The city will also expand an existing contract with the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless. This contract provides housing under the group's property portfolio, along with identifying private landlords who want to participate. According to the press release, new emergency housing vouchers were made available to the Denver Housing Authority by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, with funds established under the American Rescue Plan Act. As states restrict access to safe and legal abortions, women from those states are seeking abortions in Colorado. One Colorado fund has seen a several-fold uptick in women from other states requesting assistance. Steve Miller has more.
The fund, managed by the nonprofit abortion rights group Cobalt, provides medical costs plus travel expenses to drive or fly to a clinic that provides abortions, including procedures later in pregnancy. The Colorado Sun reports that Cobalt helps women from Colorado, other states, and other countries. Colorado is one of only seven states without restrictions on when, during pregnancy, a woman can get an abortion. There has been an increase in the fund activity as numerous other states pass laws restricting abortions. The abortion fund was established in 1984 by volunteers at First Universalist Church of Denver in response to a law that banned the use of public money to pay for abortions, meaning women who qualified for Medicaid could not use the government insurance to get abortions. Organizations in Colorado that help pregnant women keep their babies or seek adoption services have grown in recent years. According to a Colorado Sun investigation, Colorado has more than 50 religious-based pregnancy centers that encourage adoption. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The National Forest Service announced this week that the area of the 2020 East Troublesome Fire has been reopened. Closures remain in place for this year's Black Mountain, Morgan Creek, and Muddy Slide fires. Land charged by the East Troublesome Fire roughly covers 193,000 acres spanning Grand County, Rocky Mountain National Park, and the edge of Estes Park. As part of the burn area restoration, the Denver Post reports crews worked on addressing erosion, flooding, and debris flows, along with clearing and stabilizing trail paths. According to the Denver Post, although the burn area is now open, it remains susceptible to flash flooding, debris flows, and unstable trees. Hospitals and health officials in northern Colorado have reported that intensive care units are meeting or exceeding capacity due to the recent surge in COVID-19 cases. Unvaccinated patients make up the majority of hospitalizations. As of yesterday morning, UC Health hospitals in Fort Collins, Loveland, and Greeley reported ICUs that were exceeding capacity. The system has had to turn away many transfer requests from other areas in Colorado and out-of-state hospitals, said the press release. On Thursday, Larimer County reported their ICUs within the county were at 100% capacity. Boulder County Public Health has announced that bats found last week in Longmont, Hygiene, and Lyons have tested positive for rabies. Boulder Health Department released a statement saying an infected bat was found in a Longmont home on August 25th. On the following day, the county reported two more cases. A cat captured a rabies-infected bat in Hygiene, and a dog sniffed out the second. Risk assessments were done for all individuals and pets exposed to the bats, and both pets were current with their rabies vaccinations. Bats are the most common animal source of rabies in Colorado. Boulder County Public Health urges residents to contact the department as soon as possible if there's any chance an individual, child, or pet has come in contact with a bat. In today's weather for Boulder and Denver, there is a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly in the afternoon. Skies will be partly sunny with a high near 80 for Boulder and near 82 for Denver. Tonight before midnight, there is a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms with skies mostly cloudy with lows around 53 for Boulder and 57 for Denver. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 62 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Colorado has been slow to distribute federal aid funds to those in need of rental assistance. A report last month from the Department of Treasury found that less than 8% of funds from the Emergency Rental Assistance Program has been delivered to Coloradans who are struggling to pay rent because of the pandemic. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Tamara Chang, who is a business reporter for The Colorado Sun. Chang has been covering this issue and says, finally, a few weeks ago, 6 months after the program began, the Department of Local Affairs, or DOLA, found a new vendor to handle the relief payments.
So in mid-August, August 17th, DOLA switched to Bill.com, a new bill payment system. And from what I hear, that is definitely taking off. I talked to someone from the governor's office, and they said that in August, the state's part of the rental program is now paying five times the amount that it was paying in July. So it's going from paying out $5 million a week instead of $1 million. To give you some context there, half of the money was paid in August, so about $30
million. So on the report that I was looking at, places like Denver had only distributed 0.8% of the money total. And what was going on there?
The interesting thing about these programs is that the federal government actually gave a portion of it to the state government and another portion to local governments with over 200,000 people in their population. I actually did reach out to Denver to figure that out because you're right. At the end of July, Denver had only reported paying out less than $1 million. And they told me, you know, it just really was a big task to set up this ERAP program for themselves. So they spent July and August contracting out the work. I think, you know, for a city, it was just too big for them to do it with their existing staff. So like this week, actually, they contracted out to their fifth nonprofit agency, the Salvation Army. So this means organizations like the Salvation Army are actually processing the applications of Denver residents and making sure the folks are eligible, making sure the landlords know that, hey, you can't kick this person out for 30 days after you get the money, you know, stuff like that.
What happened to people during this time when they weren't getting payments on time, or they applied and heard nothing back?
Yeah. So definitely that's really tough if you were one of these renters and you had a demanding landlord. You may have applied and received approval back a couple months ago, but what usually happens if you don't pay your rent, you probably will get a notice saying you've got to pay your rent or I'm going to evict you. And one of the things for a lot of the tenants to fall back on was the national eviction moratorium that was set up by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And that gave them some protection, but landlords could find their ways around that. I mean, you know, you weren't protected if the landlord ended your lease and didn't renew it, but you stayed anyway. If you were rowdy or did some sort of criminal activity or something, you could still get evicted. And as it turns out, evictions were still, even with an eviction moratorium, you know, probably 50 to 60, 70% of the evictions were still taking place as they were 2 years ago.
I've talked to people who have said, I applied for the assistance when it first came out and I just keep getting letters in the mail saying, oh, you also need this and you also need this. And right now I can hardly pay rent and I need some kind of help, but I can't get through all of the red tape. What's that about?
So last week when the Department of Treasury just shared its monthly update on how much the states have paid out, they also decided to change some of the rules. So one of the things was self-attestation, which is this idea that you certify that, hey, I am eligible because of my past income has declined or I never made that much money. So in the past, those people would have needed to upload their income documents, maybe tax forms or something. And not everyone who is of extreme low income has that information. You know, maybe they didn't file taxes or maybe their employer went out of business, so they can't easily get those documents anymore. So that's why there's a group of people who just couldn't get the information needed. Or as mentioned, you know, if the landlord wasn't going to help them and provide the information to the state, then they couldn't get the information. And that's why people, thousands and thousands of people have been stuck. And hopefully we'll get that number higher in the weeks to come. And I have to say, it's good timing because, you know, obviously the eviction order's over. And for a lot of people who may be following pandemic unemployment, that ends on Saturday.
So do people need to reapply?
You know, they should go back into their account and see if anything changed. If nothing has changed, they should ask about it. There are different resources out there. Like, I believe there's actually a call number, a hotline for the ERAP program, and they can call that to try to get help. On a side note, if you are facing an eviction, so here in Colorado, no one has decided to extend any eviction protections for residents. State legislator, I haven't heard anything happening over there. But Governor Jared Polis did extend an executive order that goes until, right now it goes until September 6th. So this just gives people who are waiting for this money, it forces the landlord to give them 30 days notice on an eviction instead of the regular 10 days. And from what I hear, the governor's office is telling me it could be extended again on September 6th.
So pandemic unemployment benefits are expiring on Saturday. This seems like it might be a train wreck for a lot of Coloradans. If people stop getting all the money they'd been getting for the last year, it seems like there's going to be a lot of people who don't have enough money to pay rent or food or anything.
Right. It's something that I don't even dare predict what's going to happen. And a couple weeks ago, President Joe Biden said, hey, you know, yes, this is ending. He's not going to extend it, but states got a lot of federal relief. They could turn some of that money into unemployment help or help for employers too. So, you know, what I've been writing about a lot is whether there's a labor shortage. And so there's a lot of debate about whether unemployment benefits are aggravating this shortage for workers in nearly every industry. And I hear from business owners every day who say, you know, we're trying to hire people, they're not showing up for interviews, they're not showing up for work. And, you know, I hear the whole gamut. And I have to say several things. Before the pandemic, there were also labor shortages here in Colorado. So, you know, that was in the tech industry, in the construction industry, drivers, you know, we already had some problems. So this probably may not be helping, but I think there are other reasons for these shortages. And, you know, I continue to follow it in my weekly column. So, you know, if your listeners have their own story, I am open to hearing what that is, because I am just fascinated with people telling me, you know, why they decide not to take a job, or why they did, or why they hired someone, or why they didn't, you know, that sort of thing.
Tamara Chung is a business reporter at the Colorado Sun. Tamara, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Alexis. It was fun to discuss this topic. Hopefully everyone out there is doing well.
I'm volunteer producer Stacey Johnson. I recently sat down with Leah Brenner Clack, executive director and founder of Streetwise Arts, a Boulder nonprofit creating mural projects, community art, and youth art programs. Beginning on Sunday and through next week, Streetwise Arts will hold its annual mural festival called Streetwise Boulder. With numerous artists creating murals throughout Boulder and other related programming events, the festival is expected to highlight what folks at Streetwise Arts commonly refer to as artivism. I asked Leah how Streetwise Arts came into being and to explain more about the upcoming festival.
Streetwise Arts began as a public art initiative, bringing more public art and murals to Boulder. And in 2019, we sort of shifted a little bit and focused more on social justice issues and cultural diversity and community connections. And together with those two initiatives, formed Streetwise Arts. Basically, Streetwise Arts. So we evolved from just doing mural projects around town to integrating youth programs and a mural festival, and really focusing both of those on the combination of public art and social justice and social advocacy. So our youth programs, we bring in professional mentors and work with the youth about creating their own public art project around whatever social advocacy issue that they are interested in. And the same goes for our mural festival. All of the artists are creating work that is inspiring to them on a personal level, with social justice, cultural diversity, identity, public health, things like that. So we've really kind of merged the two things, artists and activism, and we use the word artivism a lot, which is the combination of those two things. And that's really our mission of bringing public art with a message to Boulder.
Can you tell us more about the upcoming annual event, Streetwise Boulder?
Yes, Streetwise Boulder is going into its third year. So it takes place over a week long in September 5th through the 12th. And during that week, we have over 30 artists coming into Boulder, painting murals across town at about 23 locations, I think we're at right now. And they'll be painting all week. So it's sort of like a live painting event that week. And then we also have many events throughout the week as well, including a launch party, a couple of art and activism panel discussions hosted at the Dairy Arts Center. We have a couple of spray painting workshops available happening at the Boulder Creative Collective with artist Grow Love. And we have an exhibition featuring all of these artists, smaller works and paintings up in the Novo Art District at the Bus Stop Gallery. And lots of tour opportunities, so self-guided tours. We have an e-bike tour that we're offering, and walking tours are always a great way to just kind of go exploring as well. So there's lots of events celebrating the artists during this week, but all of the artists have applied to be in this festival and are painting something that means something to them in regards to activism, social activism, cultural diversity, identity, public health. So there's a variety of themes that will be addressed through these murals. And all these murals will have a story behind them, including who the artist is and, you know, a specific message. And, you know, sometimes when you look at art, you're not, it's not obvious about what it is about. And that's part of the appeal and the interest about murals and art, is that you can sort of draw your own meaning towards them. But at the same time, we're going to be offering signage and QR codes that will direct people to more information about who the artist is and what this mural is about, and maybe what some causes are that they can support around this issue. So it's a lot more than just a mural festival. It's really about bringing people together and highlighting these social issues that are important in the world in 2021.
What's been the response by the Boulder community thus far since you've been in existence?
The response has been really, really positive. I don't think I've received really any negative feedback. I think, you know, people see the artwork around town, and it makes such a difference and an impact to them to see this artwork, be it because they see somebody on the wall that looks like them as far as representation, or they feel a sense of this cultural vitality that maybe they didn't when you're walking through the streets and see a bunch of new construction and something that feels cold, and then you see something vibrant and that relates to you. I think it's really impactful for people, and it gives people a safe thing to do, to walk around or take tours with their friends. And really, it's about opportunities for artists. And so many of the artists that we've included in our festival have gone on to get more jobs and more mural commissions and more success in their art career, which is really important and really hard to do sometimes as a professional artist. So I think, you know, what we're doing is important, and the community is behind us and excited about what we're doing. And each year we grow a little bit more and get a little bit more exposure. So we feel pretty good about the impact that we're making here.
To learn more about the upcoming mural festival, related events, and to view a map of the mural locations, go to streetwiseboulder.com. For KGNU, this is Stacy Johnson.
Millions of shorebirds are migrating from the Arctic tundra toward South America. Some fly through the night to reach Longmont's Lagerman Reservoir. Here, they rest and use their long bills to probe for insects and teeny shrimp along the reservoir's banks. Naturalists Scott Severs and Ruth Carl Cushman go out at dawn to spot the shorebirds flying into Lagerman.
It's September. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder naturalists Scott Severs and Ruth Carol Cushman.
We're at Lagerman Reservoir right now, and this is near the intersection of North 75th and Pike Road, and we're hoping to find a lot of migrating shorebirds.
I'm hearing lesser yellowlegs off to the northwest. Oh, there's another group up there. There's a lot of stuff in the air.
You're here very early, just after sunrise. A lot of the birds, when you see a whole flock of them flying, and it's like white twinkles, white stars flying around.
Some of these have been migrating at night, and they're coming down to forage at dawn here. We're in the midst of shorebird migration. It's a great time to watch birds that are moving all the way from the Canadian Arctic and Alaska down to Mexico and South America to spend their winters. It's truly one of the best migrations in the world. These are all shorebirds, or sandpipers, as people lovingly call them. They're short little birds with longish legs and sharp pointed bills to forage in mud. Those long beaks are designed to extract insects and crustaceans from deep sand.
Crayfish or crustaceans?
There's little shrimp that are crustaceans, just about the size of your fingernail, the perfect size for a shorebird on migration to scoop up and eat. Loggerman Reservoir is a popular birding destination, probably one of the top birding locations and one of the highest abundances of species in Boulder County. It's kind of stark, you know, but the grasslands here are pretty lively. It's a combination of prairie and water. It's very well protected.
The trail around Loggerman right now is closed at the west end to protect the nesting birds mainly, but also it helps the migrating birds. And I walked up to the fence at the closure, and there were several avocets on the far shore.
They're ground nesting birds. Their eggs are on the shore.
Avocets are one of our prettiest shorebirds, fairly large for shorebird, mainly a white bird. They are a long-legged wading bird. Sometimes you will see them out several feet from shore, and you think they're floating in the water, and then you realize they're actually walking. There's a coyote running along the far shore.
The prairie dogs are barking about the coyote over there.
Prairie dogs, that little yip when you hear it can sometimes be mistaken for a bird. So you have to be careful when you're birding thy sow that you don't call a prairie dog a bird.
Here they come, spotted sandpipers. Two really good places to see shorebird migration in Boulder County are Loggerman Reservoir, southwest of Longmont, and Boulder Reservoir on the north side of Boulder. Often these reservoirs are drawn down, exposing mudflats, sandpipers, avocets, gulls, even some songbirds come to those mudflats to eat that wealth of food.
Scott Sievers and Ruth Carol Cushman are friends and Boulder naturalists.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I have been your host, Rosanna Longo-Better.